Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
There, we have a letter. There's a note left and our daughter's gone.
A note was left and your daughter is gone?
Yeah.
How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's gone. 6 years old.
How long ago was this?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's gone.
Did it say who took her?
What?
Did it say who took her?
I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says FBTC. Victory.
It was the infamously desperate call for help that has since been heard around the world. In the early morning of December 26, 1996, Patsy Ramsey dialed 911 to report the apparent kidnapping of her 6-year-old daughter, JonBenet, from their home in an affluent area of Boulder, Colorado.
Okay, girl.
This is
me. I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath.
Please, hurry, hurry.
Patsy.
By the end of that day, the Ramseys found JonBenet's body in their own basement. The little girl was dead.
This was Boulder, Colorado. This was a little 6-year-old girl who had been tortured and murdered and left in her home. It was a town that didn't even have a homicide department because they didn't have homicides. It was horrifying.
For 23 years, the death of 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey has been the most notorious and heartbreaking unsolved murder in American history. And despite thousands of police man hours, unprecedented public interest, and a witch hunt directed at her parents, still, the ultimate question remains unanswered. Welcome to The Killing of JonBenet Ramsey, The Final Suspects, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
I'm Patsy Ramsey, JonBenet's mother.
This is Patsy Ramsey talking to the media in 1997.
I'm appalled that anyone would think that John or I would be involved in such a hideous, heinous crime. But let me assure you that I did not kill JonBenet. I did not have anything to do with it. I love that child with my whole of my heart and soul.
Over the next 12 installments, you are going to hear what may be the most exhaustive investigation into JonBenet's murder in decades, led by investigative reporter Doug Longini. Through his decades working this case, Doug Longini has become a trusted colleague to some of the most knowledgeable insiders. This is Doug talking to a very unlikely JonBenet expert from North Carolina. She goes by the single name Jameson.
So with Lou's list of suspects and our ability to actually collect DNA, we could actually move this case along significantly. We could actually have a breakthrough. What do you think?
We have a finite list now of Lou's best suspects. They have cleared a couple of people, a few people.
But there's more to be done.
But there's a lot more to be done.
We will learn much more about Detective Smith's suspect spreadsheet in future episodes. But before diving into the investigation, we first need to go back to the beginning and the details of that awful December 26th morning, 23 years ago. This is JonBenet Ramsey expert, Jameson.
On December 26th, Patsy woke up sometime between 5:30 and 6, and she said John was already up. She went down the spiral stairs, headed toward the kitchen to make coffee for her and John. The next actions happened really fast. She sees 3 sheets of paper spread out across one of the bottom steps. She steps over it. She turned around to read it, and when she got a few sentences in and it said, "We have your daughter," she suddenly realized what was going on. She ran to JonBenet's room, saw the empty bed, and started screaming for John. John had left the shower, and he came down, and he immediately told her to call 911, which she did.
Patsy Ramsey's 911 call, some of which you heard at the beginning of this episode, has been the subject of 2 decades worth of conjecture and debate. Here's former Supervisory Deputy United States Marshal Mark McClish.
Patsy Ramsey had called 911 when she found the ransom note. And so the 911 operator asked her what's going on, and then Patsy gave their address. So then a second time, the operator said, "What's going on there, ma'am?" And Pat's response said, "We have a kidnapping. Hurry, please."
The cops come to the house. Then about 6 o'clock in the morning, they search the house and do not find the girl.
My name is Robert Whitson, and I was on-call detective supervisor in 1996 when the JonBenet Ramsey case occurred. It was approximately 6 o'clock or so in the morning. I received a call that there was a kidnapping, and so got hold of 2 detectives who responded, and then I responded. I went to the police department and met with the night shift supervisor and also started making some phone calls. So I didn't get up to the house. It was probably around 9 o'clock in the morning.
Almost from the moment Boulder police responded to Patsy Ramsey's 911 call, catastrophic mistakes were made. Although the case was still the kidnapping, normal police protocol would dictate that the Ramsey's house should have been treated as a crime scene. As Detective Whitson explains, it was not.
When I went in the house, I actually was a little surprised because there were 3 or 4 adults standing there. And I asked one of the detectives, "Who are these people?" And he told me that they were friends of the Ramseys. At that point, one of the mistakes I made was I should have took those people someplace else, either to the police department or to one of the other neighbors' homes that lived nearby. But I should have had them removed from the house. At that point, of course, we're working under the assumption that this appeared to be a legitimate kidnapping. And also, the movie Ransom had just come out a couple weeks before, and there were a lot of similarities as far as the movie Ransom with the information we had at that time.
Detective Whitson also remembers both Patsy and John, at this stage, remaining relatively calm.
I met with Mr. Ramsey. He was very calm and collected. I only talked to Patsy Ramsey for probably a minute or less. And all I did was tell her that we were going to do everything possible to get their daughter back. She basically was sitting it was on the first level, and she was sitting in a chair, and you could tell she had been crying. Detectives and I went up to JonBenet's bedroom, just did a real quick cursory look, shut the door, put crime scene tape over that. I specifically told Mr. Ramsey, nobody goes in that room. I also asked him for samples of his and Mrs. Ramsey's handwriting. He gave me 2 notepads, and I didn't even look at him at that point. We did drive around the area to see if there was anybody suspicious or anybody that looked like it could possibly be involved. I have to tell you that I was told that police officers had searched the house and didn't find anything.
I love solving puzzles. That's what true crime is to me, after all, just one big puzzle. When I want to take a break from the dark stuff, though, I like to lighten up my puzzle time with Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a puzzle game where every level feels like uncovering a new layer in a story. one you get to take part in. I love that the game is challenging while not being frustrating. The best part for me is when I have to choose the fiends I want on my team for each level. I have to make sure I'm playing the best fiends possible based on their skill sets, and since every level is different, it requires me to choose wisely for every challenge. The more I play, the more fun it gets. Plus, you don't need the internet to play, so anytime I want a little entertainment, Best Fiends is my go-to. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play online. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
As detectives were about to find out, that initial search had been anything but satisfactory. Even as the house filled with everyone from police to friends of the family, the broken body of little JonBenet was lying behind a door in the basement. Here's Mark McClish.
It is a little bit unusual. Now, they thought they're dealing with a kidnapping because you had a ransom note, but you absolutely want to do a search of the house, which they did, but it was just a cursory search. They didn't search every room, obviously, because they didn't discover her body. The detective asked John Ramsey to look around and see if anything was missing. And so he took a friend. They started in the basement. I guess starting in the basement worked their way up. But that's when John Ramsey, he went into a room. It was a room that had no windows. And that's where John Ramsey found JonBenet's body.
Our team has spoken exclusively to John Ramsey about that terrible morning.
Well, it was at first a relief. It's like, oh my God, I found her. It was just a flood of thankfulness. And then I pretty quickly realized that she wasn't alive. And I just screamed and carried her upstairs. I don't know. And of course, I was criticized for disturbing the crime scene. What would you do? Oh, it's my daughter. I'm not going to touch her because I don't want to disturb the crime scene. That is insane.
That would have been suspicious.
Yeah, no kidding. Big time. And yet, the police thought that was bizarre, and media criticized me for disturbing the crime scene. It's just insane.
Local news reporter Paula Woodward covered the case from the start.
I was an investigative reporter for 25 to 30 years at KUSA TV. Her father discovered the body, which was what was so strange. The Boulder Police Department really mishandled it because they just didn't know how to do it. They left after ascertaining that they didn't think she was in the house. They did a cursory search, and her father was told by the one detective in the house, hey, why don't you look around? See if anything's out of place, which is so strange. So he went to the basement with a friend, and he found her body. And it was just in talking with him, what a terrible thing as a parent to find your murdered child's body.
This is Detective Robert Whitson.
Then when the call came in that they had found JonBenet's body, I and another detective drove to the Ramsey's house. And when I walked in the front door, people were standing immediately inside the door. There's like a foyer area on the first level. I remember Mrs. Ramsey was holding JonBenet. It was like a mother's wail. She was just crying profusely. We asked the minister if he would ask her to put JonBenet down. She laid the body down. I remember them having to assist her into the other room. She was basically just so distraught and limp. It was hard for her to even walk on her own power.
If discovering the body of your 6-year-old child isn't terrible enough, the horror was compounded by the sickening injuries JonBenet had sustained. Forensic pathologist Cyril Wecht and former sheriff's investigator John San Augustin talk us through those injuries in what may, for some listeners, be upsetting detail.
The findings at autopsy revealed a rope around the neck and one end of that rope was tied to a loop around the right wrist. There was a fracture on the top of the skull, about 7.5-8 inches in length, frontal to occipital. That means from the front of the skull, the forehead region, to the rear part of the skull.
There were two stun gun marks found on her face and on her back, of which both injuries were very similar.
Further pathological findings noted by the coroner included chronic inflammation of the lining of the vaginal wall called the vaginal mucosa, very delicate lining.
There were some wood fibers that were found inside her vaginal bowl, indicating that she had been sexually assaulted. So when you put just that piece together, somebody had stun gunned her, somebody had sexually assaulted her, somebody had strangled her, and then somebody subsequently had used some blunt object to strike her head, cracking those two occipital lobes.
Boulder police were no longer dealing with a kidnapping. They were dealing with the sexual assault, torture, and murder of an innocent six-year-old girl. And from the start, it seems detectives in this sleepy, peaceful town were completely unable to cope.
No one of those investigators had any homicide experience. Everyone on that case, probably 7 or 8 of them initially, none of them had homicide experience. And logic would dictate to you, you need somebody with homicide experience. They didn't have it.
As John San Augustin, who would later investigate the case alongside Detective Lou Smith, explains to Doug Longini, many of the later problems and controversies that have dogged the case sprang from the initial blunders made by the Boulder police force.
When you're doing an investigation, much like this, where the initial call is a kidnapping, it is crucial that the crime scene, in our terms in the law enforcement profession, we use a term called forensic sterility. And what that means is that you try to maintain that crime scene as best you can in the event that somebody either left something or took something. And so what happens in this case is that we have a major contamination of the crime scene, because not only do we not remove the family from the crime scene when the call comes in, we actually allow the family to introduce into the crime scene their friends, their pastor is allowed to come into the crime scene. So there was never any real security of the crime scene at the onset of this investigation. To compound the problem even further, what happens is that law enforcement asks a potential suspect who should have been separated and placed in a car in question to go look for things out of the ordinary. That should have been the role of either the investigators or the crime scene techs who would have been processing that scene. But instead, John Ramsey is the one that then, you know, provides that contamination, that additional contamination, of which is why this case, you know, 23 years later, is still unsolved because of all of the screw-ups that happen in the onset of this investigation.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The problems were compounded when reports of the little girl's brutal death reached the media. Suddenly, JonBenet Ramsey was a household name around the world. Here's local reporter and author of We Have Your Daughter, Paula Woodward.
By the Monday following her body being found on the prior Thursday, that Monday, the networks were already involved. It all happened so fast, and it was so competitive. And all of a sudden, boom, the networks were there. And within a few days, we learned that the networks were interested. Her child beauty pageant pictures had been leaked and sold to the media by the photographers who took them. And it was just out of control chaos. Here was this beautiful little girl in child beauty pageant pictures, and that didn't go over well. It was immediate. Once the national media was there, that it became international. It happened very, very fast. Little girl murdered, found in her home. Note left that she was kidnapped, but she wasn't. She was murdered. There are child beauty pageant pictures and video, and everybody throughout the world was there.
Obviously, somebody, one or more people, were giving the news media information. Some of it was accurate, some of it was inaccurate.
The media certainly was not at its best. This murder happened during the Christmas holidays when more of your experienced reporters are on vacation. And so a lot of inexperienced reporters were on the case when the murder first happened, and it continued that way.
A huge part of what made the murder so gruesomely fascinating for the press were several bizarre details that lay at the heart of the case.
A ransom note had been left at the scene. Not just a ransom note, but a 2.5-page ransom note, printed fairly neatly with just strange things in it.
Doug Longini and Jameson believe the ransom note is still one of the most valuable pieces of evidence we have.
Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed. If you want to see her in 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. It's signed Victory SBTC.
Yeah, it is a bizarre note, but I think that it's an important note because Lou used to say It's a gift the killer left behind because it's part of what his brain thought, part of who he is, that he would sit down and he would write this note, this particular note. Everything in it was important to Lou, and I think it's important now.
But things got even stranger when it was found that the ransom note had been written on paper from a notepad inside the house. Former Deputy U.S. Marshal and statement analysis expert Mark McClish has pored over the details of that note for over two decades. He explains several other oddities in its language and content.
The first thing I noticed before even analyzing a note is that it was very long, like 2.5 pages long. Ransom notes are very short. You know, we have your daughter. This is how much money we want. We'll be in contact. But this note, as I mentioned, went on for 2.5 pages. And it contained information you generally don't find in a ransom note, such as make sure you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank, telling the Ramseys to be arrested. That stuff just doesn't appear in legitimate ransom notes. And then we also have to remember that the note was written on their stationery with their pen in their house. Now, most kidnappers write the ransom note ahead of time, and then they bring the note with them. But this person entered their residence while they were out to dinner that night, found some paper, wrote this ransom note, and waited for them to return home.
He looks for a pen and paper. In the middle of the night, he finds it. He starts to write a ransom note, doesn't like the beginning of it because he knows one day it'll be a communication of great interest. He starts again, and that's when he writes this note, "We represent a small foreign faction."
Another strange detail was the amount of money the supposed kidnappers of JonBenet were demanding for her return. Paula Woodward explains.
In the ransom note, the 2.5-page ransom note, there was a specific demand for money, $118,000, which was just very strange, very mysterious, added to the mystery of this crime. Why would someone ask for $118,000? And initially, the police leaked that John Ramsey had received a bonus that year in that amount. John Ramsey was a millionaire. And here's this ransom note asking for the return of his daughter for $118,000. It didn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense.
Now, everything a person says has a meaning. And there's a reason why they used $118,000. I mean, first of all, it's a very low amount. I mean, I believe the Ramseys at that time were worth maybe $6 million. So $118,000 is a very low amount. We expect them to say a million, maybe half a million.
The first thing that Lou Smith said to District Attorney Alex Hunter was that note was written before the murder. And I'll tell you why nobody, after doing that heinous crime, could sit down and write that calm of a letter. Even the most hardened criminal would be on an adrenaline rush and anxious to get out of there. And yes, it is a long ransom note, but it is by far not the longest. And in a study of ransom notes that I did, it's not uncommon for ransom notes to be over a page or to say what denomination of money they want. What is unique to this note is all of the references to moving lines, and that would tell us something about the author of the note that should not be overlooked.
Forensic pathologist Cyril Wecht outlines the case against the intruder theory.
This intruder knows how to get into the house there in Boulder without causing any disturbance. He knows where the little girl's bedroom is. He's able to awaken her, take her from her room without causing any disturbance. Now get this picture. Having had his perverted sexual pleasure with the little girl, he decides he's going to kill her, and then he's going to write a ransom note. They forgot to bring pen and paper. He didn't even bring the rope. The rope is from material right there in the house. He forgot JonBenet Ramsey's body. You just wrote a ransom note demanding money. You went to all of his trouble. You had the behavioral strength and control to accomplish all of this in the dead of the night, so you're not flustered or hurried. You're doing all of this stuff, and now you've written the note demanding this money, and then you leave. You don't take the body. Take the body, put it in the back of your car, throw it in the sewer, throw it in the forest, throw it in the woods, throw it in the river, throw it in the lake, do whatever you want to.
Suddenly, John and Patsy Ramsey, after losing their daughter in the most horrific of circumstances, found themselves prime suspects in her murder.
John Ramsey, Patsy Ramsey, Burke Ramsey, and JonBenet Ramsey were the only known people in the house when her body was found. With homicides, one of the first things detectives do is they look at who's in the area, who's near the scene, or who's in the home, if that's where it happened. And so they looked at John and Patsy Ramsey, but it, in my opinion, got way out of control in that it seemed that John and Patsy Ramsey were the only ones they were looking at for their daughter's murder.
Here's fellow detective John San Augustin, who outlines just a few of the reasons why Lou Smith believed an intruder killed JonBenet.
Typically, in my experience, and I've, you know, probably investigated well over a few hundred death investigations, I would tell you that when you're looking at a murder like this, the parents typically, if the parents are involved, they either say it was something that it was an accident. They may say something like, I struck them. But never have I seen in my career anything where a stun gun, strangulation, and a blow to the head all happen, as well as a sexual assault. They can find no prior application of the rope that was used to strangle JonBenet, meaning they found no other rope in the house matching the rope that was used to strangle her. The tape that was used to put over her mouth, there was no prior application of that tape found anywhere in the home either. Why would the parents, if they were planning on killing their daughter, why would they take her from her bedroom, sexually assault her, stun gun her twice, strangle her, and then subsequently strike her head, and then stage her body in the basement in a cellar, and then go write a ransom note? None of that made sense.
In her 23 years reporting on and conducting her own investigation into the case, Paula Woodward has come to know JonBenet's father, John Ramsey, very well.
John Ramsey has a very deep faith. In spite of everything that has happened to him, his daughter's murder has become his life. But he also has made sure that he has time in his life for Burke and his two other children, John Andrew and Melinda. That's very important to him. He has remarried to a wonderful woman after Patsy died in the early 2000s. John believes her killer will be found. He doesn't know how, he doesn't know when, he doesn't know where, but that is part of his belief of faith. And I guess that's the best way I can express it. I think it's critically important that any possible leads are checked out if someone has the courage and tenacity to do so. This is such an important case because of all that went wrong with it. Anyone who does something to further the investigation on this case should be lauded. It's really important. And somebody knows something.
I think one of the big questions in this case is, if the family did not do it, who did, right? Is it an intruder? Are there other suspects out there that could have been involved in this? Are there other suspects that need to be looked at? Absolutely. Should there be other suspects, DNAs collected? Absolutely. And the problem in this case is that law enforcement was so focused on the family that they never allowed themselves to truly investigate the facts of this case. Still today, there are still a number of leads that have never been followed up by law enforcement.
Next time on The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects.
The few people who are left in the Boulder Police Department still believe that John and or Patsy Ramsey murdered their daughter.
All of the jurors believe that the intruder theory didn't hold water.
And long buried recordings of police interviews with John, Patsy, and Burke Ramsey.
Why did you feel scared, you know, when mom came rushing in?
Like, I felt like something bad happened.
The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, is hosted by me, Danielle Robay. Executive produced by Dylan Howard and Matt Sprouse, and is a production of Broad and Water Studios and Endeavor Audio. Executive producers also include Tom Freestone, Doug Longini, Susan Bennett, James Robertson, and Andy Tillett.
The series is written by Dominic Utten. Reporting by Doug Montero. The series is mixed and engineered by Sean Kravitz and Sam Ada. There is so much more to this story, and you don't want to miss anything, I can assure you. Subscribe to The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, wherever you get podcasts. If you have any information that could help our investigators and the Ramseys identify JonBenet's killer, please help us at tips@justiceforjonbenet.com.